Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Anti-Federalist Papers in the Dover Thrift Edition's American History series gathers writings from the public debate over ratification of the United States Constitution between 1787 and 1789. Although the volume is associated with Patrick Henry, the Anti-Federalist case was not the work of a single author or a unified committee. It emerged through speeches, essays, letters, and pamphlets by opponents of ratification, many published under pseudonyms or linked to figures such as Henry, George Mason, Richard Henry Lee, George Clinton, and others. The collection belongs to American political history, constitutional studies, and political theory. Its purpose is to preserve the arguments of those who feared that the proposed Constitution would create a consolidated national government too distant from the people and too powerful for Republican liberty. Read alongside the Federalist Papers. It clarifies why the Bill of Rights became politically necessary and why debates over federal power. Representation and civil liberties remain central to American constitutional interpretation. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a dispersed opposition rather than a single constitutional program. One of the defining features of the Anti-Federalist Papers is that it is not a systematic counterpart to the Federalist Papers. The Federalist argument was produced by a small group writing with a coordinated purpose in defense of ratification, while the Anti-Federalist position developed across newspapers, conventions, letters, and local political exchanges. This makes the collection intellectually varied and sometimes uneven, but that unevenness is historically important. It shows that resistance to the Constitution came from different regions, social perspectives, and political anxieties rather than from one faction with a single platform. Some writers emphasized state sovereignty. Others concentrated on civil liberties, and still others objected to representation, taxation, or the power of federal courts. The result is a record of constitutional skepticism in motion. Readers see not only conclusions but also the political process through which citizens and leaders tested the meaning of Republican government. The collection is therefore valuable less as a finished doctrine than as evidence of public constitutional reasoning before ratification. Secondly, the warning against consolidated national power. A central anti-federalist concern is that the proposed Constitution could transform a federation of states into a consolidated national government. The writers feared that broad federal powers over taxation, commerce, military organization, and lawmaking would gradually reduce the states to subordinate administrative units. Their reasoning was not simply hostility to government. Since many anti-federalists accepted the need to improve the Articles of Confederation, their objection was that the new Constitution appeared to give federal authority enough reach to absorb the practical functions of local government. This concern was tied to a Republican theory of proximity. Government was thought to be safer when officials remained close to the people, familiar with local conditions, and dependent on communities that could monitor their conduct. A distant central authority, by contrast, might use legal complexity, fiscal power, and standing institutions to weaken popular control. The collection, therefore, frames federalism not as a technical allocation of powers, but as a safeguard for political liberty. Thirdly, representation, scale, and the problem of Republican accountability. The Anti-Federalist essays repeatedly question whether a large republic can remain genuinely representative. Their concern was that the proposed House of Representatives would contain too few members to reflect the variety of interests, occupations, local conditions, and regional habits in a growing country. If representatives came mainly from wealthier or more prominent classes, ordinary citizens might formally possess the vote while lacking meaningful influence over national policy. This argument differs from a simple demand for more democracy. Anti-Federalists were asking whether Republican institutions could preserve accountability when the electorate was geographically broad and socially diverse. A representative who served a large district might become less dependent on direct knowledge of constituents and more dependent on elite networks, party management, or national ambition. The issue also affected legislation itself. Laws made by distant representatives might ignore local circumstances that state legislatures understood better. In this way, the collection treats representation as a practical mechanism of liberty, not merely as an abstract principle. Fourthly, the demand for explicit protections of individual rights. The most enduring anti-federalist contribution to American constitutional development was the insistence that the Constitution needed explicit protections for individual liberties. Supporters of ratification often argued that a Bill of Rights was unnecessary because the federal government had only delegated powers. Anti-Federalists considered that answer insufficient. In their view, written limits were essential precisely because governments tend to expand their own authority and because future officials might interpret implied powers broadly. They worried about freedoms of speech, press, religion, jury trial, due process, and protection from intrusive searches or military abuses. The eventual adoption of the first 10 amendments did not satisfy every anti-federalist objection, but it demonstrated the force of their critique. Their argument also reveals an important constitutional logic. Rights were not treated as favors granted by government, but as pre-existing liberties that required clear barriers against official encroachment. The collection therefore helps readers understand the Bill of Rights as a political compromise born from distrust of unchecked power. Lastly, a continuing method of constitutional skepticism. The lasting relevance of the anti-federalist papers lies not only in specific 18th century objections, but also in its method of constitutional skepticism. The writers ask what powers an institution might claim over time, how officials might use ambiguity, and whether formal structures are strong enough to resist political ambition. This approach differs from evaluating a constitution only by its declared purposes. Anti-federalists often judged institutions by foreseeable incentives: who controls money, who commands force, who interprets law, and who remains close enough to the people to be held responsible. That method remains useful because modern constitutional disputes often concern expansion, implication, and administrative reach rather than openly announced tyranny. At the same time, the collection has limits. Some fears did not develop exactly as predicted, and the essays do not offer one coherent alternative design. Their value is therefore diagnostic rather than comprehensive. They train readers to examine how constitutional language, institutional incentives, and political culture interact in preserving or weakening liberty. In conclusion, the Anti-Federalist Papers is best suited for readers who want to understand the Constitution as the result of argument rather than inevitability. Students of American history, constitutional law, political theory, and civic education will benefit from seeing how ratification was contested by people who shared many revolutionary commitments but disagreed about how power should be structured. After independence, the book offers practical intellectual benefits. It sharpens awareness of federalism, clarifies the origins of the Bill of Rights, and encourages close attention to institutional incentives. Its usefulness is strongest when read with the Federalist Papers. Since the two collections illuminate opposing assumptions about energy and government, public accountability, and the risks of centralization, what makes this volume stand out from similar works is its access to the dissenting side of the founding debate in a compact historical form. It is less polished and less unified than the Federalist Defense, but that is part of its importance. The collection preserves objections that shape constitutional compromise and continue to influence debates over civil liberties, state authority, federal courts, and executive power. Readers should approach it as a historically grounded challenge to constitutional optimism, a reminder that written government must be judged by its limits as well as by its ambitions. If you would like to support Patrick Henry, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.